Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to a new episode of the Pull Up Podcast. As you just heard, we do have a little bit of beats going on. Finally, some music back on the show. I am joined today by fellow Hoops Critic writer, Mr. Justin Salkin from Brooklyn's Beat. How are we doing today, Justin?
I'm good, Jacob. What's up?
No, nothing much. You know, as you and I were just talking, the season's 10% over. It sounds very depressing to say that. But we planned this podcast last week for you to come on this week, and what great timing. Perfect timing, we have you on, and the Nets win their first game against a pretty good opponent in the Houston Rockets. Just off the bat, why have the Nets been so dreadful this season to start?
Honestly, I think it's because the two most important things a basketball team can have is a good point guard to break down a defense and solid defensive players, and the Nets, they sorely lack in both areas. I mean, I saw ESPN's forecast. They had Jarrett Jack as, I think, the 26th best point guard. That's probably generous. He might be the worst starting point guard, and if he's not, he's close. He's just not a starter. And they have so many guys that are minus defenders. I mean, besides, you know, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, who's been good, and, you know, maybe Thaddeus Young on some smaller guys. I mean, mostly it's a team of minus defenders. They don't have any point guards. If you look at the roster, probably only about two guys are just clearly starters now that Joe Johnson's kind of going in the tank. I mean, I like Bogdanovich. He's probably more of a reserve right now. It's just a team of a lot of bench guys and Brook Lopez. That's really what the team is, and it looks like we're probably going to see a lot of losing going forward.
Yeah, and the most surprising thing is there aren't many guys getting a lot of minutes on this team. You know, obviously Joe Johnson's going to get his 35 a game. They're going to play Brook Lopez starting minutes. You know, Bogdan's getting his minutes. But outside of that, no one's really, you know, obviously Jarrett Jack as well. He's playing that 25 to 30 range. But a lot of these guys are just getting the 15, 20 minutes. And for me, I feel like the Brooklyn Nets are at a crossroads. They need to decide, are they going to compete? Or do you start developing these younger guys and giving them more minutes to develop? And it's a mix of a roster. It does have enough veteran leadership on here to compete on a nightly basis, I think. Don't know how well that would translate into W's and losses, but they still have, you know, veteran talent on this roster, but they also have some young guys who I think should get a little more playing time, as you just referenced in Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. So what is your kind of mindset in, you know, knowing what we know now, 8 games in, they're 1-7, really struggled to be competitive in some of these games, not looking like they're going to be fighting for a playoff spot. What kind of direction would you take the Nets in?
It's really tough, and they put themselves in such a bad situation that I almost think they have to kind of hedge their bets, because on one hand, I do think they want to develop some of these kids because you want to have some guys for the future going forward, because you don't exactly have any draft picks over the next few years. But then, you know, on the other hand of it, free agency is basically their best bet to rebuild this roster. And if you look at free agency the last few years, guys are signing where they think they could win. So on the other hand, I think you want to try to win some games, because if you don't win games, guys aren't going to want to sign here. You saw it with, like, Monroe and Aldridge, and you can even go back further than that. Guys aren't really looking at this is a big city and a cool place to play. They're looking more at wins and losses. And if the Nets don't win games and can't get free agents, then they're not picking in the draft. And then they have nobody to trade. I mean, what else can they do, right? So I think they have to develop guys, but also need to try to win. They kind of just got to try to balance both the best they can, make the best of a bad situation.
How do you see the front office handling their – I would call them their two assets. I think Joe Johnson would be a nice asset. I don't know what you'd get in return for him. You know, obviously he's got like a year or two left in the contract, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, he's a veteran who can probably help a team who needs some scoring off the bench or possibly a starter position on some of these, you know, fringe playoff teams. And then also the other guy who I think can get you back some value is Brook Lopez. And so first off, kind of break down Joe Johnson. You know, do the Nets look to move him at the deadline? You know, kind of hope for somebody to, you know, need that score, pay you know, a little bit higher than they normally would. And then for Brook Lopez's side of it, do you, you know, what is the pros and cons of trading him for the Nets? Because he is ideally, you know, your only true asset. Do you trade him and hope to get a first-round draft pick in return, or do you think you kind of just hold on to him and move forward?
With Brook, I'd actually hold on to him. I think having so few assets, I know you could turn him into some, but probably not a lottery pick or anything like that. You know, having so few assets, I think they need some certainty in terms of pieces that they know could be a guy going forward. And at least with Brook, they could do that. So I'd hold on to him, even though they could get something back for him with Joe. I mean, I obviously look to move him, but I don't know if anybody's going to take him on. And then, you know, you have to match salaries and deals, making about $25 million. I don't see a team saying I'd rather have his $25 million than some combinations of guys' $25 million, even if those contracts extend into the future. I'm just not seeing it. If that deal's there, I take it. If they take on a year or two of salary, but maybe add some picks for the leverage, but I don't know if that's there. I wouldn't trade him to a team with cap space to kind of rent cap space, because you usually have to give up young assets to do that. The Nets certainly shouldn't do that. So I try to move Joe. I don't think they can. I actually would look to move Jack as well. I think he's a guy they might be able to get at least a little bit of something for. Even if they can get a second rounder, I'd do it.
Now, let's jump around the Eastern Conference here, because it's been a fun battle. You know, the Raptors started off 5-0, then proceeded to go 1-3. You know, Cleveland had the hiccup opening night but hasn't lost since, and they haven't even got Kyrie Irving back. The Atlanta Hawks are back up in the top of their division at 8-2. Knowing what we know now, what are your top three teams in the Eastern Conference playoffs, and do you think there's going to have some sort of change, or is that going to move around as the season goes on?
Yeah, right now it might look like the three teams you mentioned. I definitely think Cleveland and Atlanta are in that top three. Cleveland looks great, no surprise there with LeBron James and crew on the team. And the Hawks, I think Ken Bazemore has been great. He's been huge because he's probably replaced not all of what Carroll did, but a large chunk of it, but then they get split from the front line. So, you know, he's been good for them. And, you know, Toronto might be in that group now. They might stay there. I could see Washington breaking into that with John Wall and Beal playing well. I don't know who else would break in. Chicago looks a little up and down. Maybe they pick up Hoiberg's offense as the season goes on, but I think Washington's the better bet than them. So I'd probably say Cleveland, Atlanta, and Toronto, unless Washington can overtake Toronto. But Lowry looks really good, and I think Toronto might keep that spot, especially with Valanciunas playing well now too.
Absolutely, you know, and I was, you know, I was kind of worried that Toronto would be stagnant, but you know, they came out firing out of the gate. But I will be interested to see how they can hold up throughout the season. I'm not sure they have a deep enough bench to withstand an injury or two here or there. You know, especially if one of the injuries happened to be DeMar DeRozan or Kyle Lowry. Now let's look at a team that's having a surprise season to start this year, and that is the New York Knicks. Most people predicted they'd win what, 20 games, and here we are, they're 4-5. Melo's been playing some of his best basketball in quite a while, and he's got some help, it seems like, and it seems like Kristaps Porzingis might be the real deal. Maybe Phil knew something we all didn't when we made fun of him for selecting Porzingis up there. What is your take on the New York Knicks so far this season, and kind of what's your ceiling and floor for this team for this season?
I'd say, well, starting with ceiling and floor, I'd say ceiling is probably, you know, low playoff seed, kind of feisty first-round exit. Floor is probably, you know, 10th or 11th in the conference, winning maybe 25, 30 games and not really kind of doing too much. But I really like what Phil Jackson's done. I mean, they get a lot of flack. I don't know if it's because, you know, he's Phil Jackson, so he comes with this expectation of, well, he's definitely going to deliver something huge. You know, I really like that they didn't panic this offseason. You know, Plan A didn't work. They didn't get Aldridge or Kevin Love or anybody like that, but you know, instead of panicking or doing kind of what the Knicks always have done since, you know, since the beginning of time, I think they took a step back. They got guys who fit the roster. They put some, you know, good fits around Melo. They still have some flexibility for next summer to kind of build off it. Porzingis has been really good. You know, a guy who probably the fan base didn't want. You know, there's that taboo with foreign athletes sometimes with New York fans, I guess. But, you know, the guy that the fan base probably didn't want at number four, but they didn't care about that. They saw something, and he's been really good. If you consider that there's usually a development arc for European players and, you know, years two and three, he's been really good in year one. So I really like what they've done. And, you know, they're a solid group. They look like they might be a kind of 35-win, 40-win group here.
Yeah, which is shocking. You know, I think everyone had them as the worst team in the division, outside of Philadelphia, obviously. But I think out of the two New York teams, everyone, you know, was always favoring the Nets, especially in the last few seasons. And, you know, I'm pleasantly surprised by how the Knicks have been playing lately. And Porzingis seems to be the real deal. Now, on to some sad news. I'm not sure if you heard this. The story broke today about Michael Wright.
I actually have not heard this yet today.
Okay, so Michael Wright was found dead today with a head wound and covered in trash bags in his SUV in Brooklyn today. It's just a sad, you know, I don't want to get too far off onto this topic, but, you know, these basketball players are human beings, and they do have, you know, troubles and situations off the court that we might not know, or whether it's, you know, whether it's a love affair or, you know, jealousy or money thing. I mean, obviously the details aren't out yet, but, you know, it's pretty sad that, you know, these things happen to athletes, and it's a reminder that they're humans as well. So but as that story gets broken and more information comes out, we'll know exactly what happened. But just a tough, tough break there for, you know, a New York Knick and a former NBA player.
Absolutely, and it shows that, you know, money doesn't buy happiness. You know, money's good to have, but it doesn't automatically buy you everything you want in life, unfortunately.
Right, right. So since we're on the topic of rookies with Kristaps Porzingis, this rookie class is turning out to be a fun one already. And, you know, my favorite rookie so far this season is Emmanuel Mudiay, because I think he's, you know, has the hardest job out of all of them. You know, Denver's never really been viewed as a team that's going to be bad. They're always expecting to win out there. He's given the keys to the kingdom. But what other rookies have surprised you so far this young season? And, you know, keep in mind, we haven't even seen some of these guys get playing time that we like. Like Mario Hezonja down in Orlando has not been getting the playing time that he'd like. But which rookies have kind of stood out to you so far in this early part of the season?
I'd say the one that stood out to me is definitely Karl Anthony Towns. You know, no disrespect to Porzingis, who's been very good, and Moody has been very good, too. They're probably 2 and 3 for me, but Towns has really, really impressed me. He's been really good. He's put up some huge games early in the season, and some people have wondered, is he already their best player? And considering Wiggins had a good rookie season and Rubio's an established piece, I mean, that's very impressive. He's been very good early. I mean, you know, the whole cliche of, oh, Kevin Garnett will show the young Timberwolves how to, you know, develop and provide leadership and, you know, show these guys the way. You're really seeing it with Karl Anthony Towns. He's just been fantastic, and I can't wait to watch him grow. They have something really good cooking over there. And Okafor's been impressed, too. But Towns is the guy for me.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, that's another team that's won more games than we expected. I mean, they're above 500. And again, it's early. We can't get too crazy on these records. But, you know, they've won 4 games out of the 7 games. And, you know, they're playing tight every night. You know, they haven't won a road game yet. Actually, I'm sorry. They've only won road games. They have not won a home game, which is very odd, very awkward there. But, you know, he's been outstanding. And you know, this is going to be probably the most tight rookie race that we have in recent memory, at least so far how it's shaping up. So it should be fun to view on. Now, here's a fun story that popped the other day, and everyone's kind of talking about it. They're calling him, you know, the jealous ex-lover or what have you, but the report about Mark Cuban keeping the text messages with DeAndre Jordan and planning to release them one day, what is your take on all this? I mean, to me, it's just like, just move on, you know. Be thankful it didn't work. You didn't overpay for him, and, you know, he's not that great of a NBA player. He's not a max deal, in my opinion. I know he's great defensively, but offensively he's a liability at most times. So he almost dodged a bullet here, but it just seems like they're, you know, just bitter, and it's just like time to move on. So what is your take on Cuban coming out saying that he's, you know, kept all the text messages and plans to release them one day?
You know, I agree with you that it's time to move on. You know, it actually surprised me how crazy this story got from the start. I mean, to me, DeAndre Jordan, is he a good player? Yes. Is he a very good player? You know, maybe yes, but is he a great player? Probably not. Just how much has happened over this has really surprised me. And, you know, I understood why they were angry initially. I mean, you know, this just doesn't happen. You know, I know he didn't sign a contract, and there's no written rule that says he couldn't do what he did, but, you know, it's just something that never happens, and I can certainly understand why they were far off guard and, you know, surprised and offended by how he handled it, and he couldn't just reach out personally and say, hey, look, this is what I'm doing. And Cuban made his point about that over the offseason. I understood why he did it, but at this point, I mean, so much time has passed. You know, just get over it already and move on and focus on the guys you have. You know, focus on Dirk Nowitzki and Chandler Parsons and, you know, the rest of the roster and what you can do with kind of who you have in-house. Just forget about that whole side.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, it's just one of those situations, you know. What can you really do? It's done. It's over. Everyone's moved on, at least the fans, in terms of everyone who's not a fan of the Dallas Mavericks. I'm kind of tired of the story as it is, and, You know, I know they just keep dragging it out. I know the Mavericks had a poor choice of a cartoon to air before the game. I know ESPN built up their hype video for it to get viewers, and I get all that. But, you know, just win on the court and, you know, let your play do the talking. And segue into another situation that's more so off the court than on the court is, you know, we're 8 games into the season, and yet we already have our DeMarcus Cousins screaming at George Karl in the locker room story. Is he ever going to get it? Because for me in this situation, I blame DeMarcus. That's just a sign of immaturity. That's not handling a loss with professionalism. It's kind of the whiny baby mentality that he had, you know, screaming. And you know, for that kind of locker room to call him out and say, you know, you were wrong. And then Vlade Divac coming down, talking to the players only, asking, should I fire Karl? It's already turned into a circus mess, which it started as a circus mess to begin the season. But my question to you, Justin, is DeMarcus going to get it ever, or is just who he is, and he's just going to have to find that coach that can deal with this?
You know, it's kind of funny. We're spending most of this time kind of talking about things we didn't expect, like the Knicks getting off to a pretty solid start, maybe the Nets slower than we expected, and the Wolves with their fast start. And now we're kind of talking about, like, this is the exact sort of thing that you would have expected when George Karl coached DeMarcus Cousins and Rajon Rondo. Like, this is a disaster. Team is totally dysfunctional. Fired Malone last year, just off the wall. You know, with Cousins, I do think she was wrong. I do think he needs to relax and cool it and just play. But at the same, and I do think that there is some worry that maybe he won't ever get it, and some guys don't, but I actually tend to be optimistic and actually think that one day the light's going to go on for him. Hopefully it doesn't happen too late in his career, and hopefully it actually does, but I think one day the light will go off, he'll focus better, and he'll be more consistent with his attitude and his support of his coaches, and I think one day he'll get it. Maybe it happens in Sacramento, maybe it requires him to leave. I mean, kind of the guy I look at, and I know it's a little different because there were different issues with him, is Zach Randolph. He totally didn't get it in the beginning of his career. I know it was more with drugs and less things like this, but then he became one of the best professionals in the game. The Grizzlies are known as the most blue-collar, you know, team there is, at least before this season. So I think he'll get it one day. He certainly doesn't get it now, but I think it'll happen for him.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. It's going to have to happen at some point or another. You know, at some point you just grow up, you mature, and everybody grows up and matures at different ages. And, you know, for him with his talent, you kind of hope it's sooner rather than later, because you'd hate to see, you know, a very talented basketball player like that really get wasted on, you know, immaturity, off-court issues, and, you know, his inability to work with teammates. And, you know, it's going to keep rearing his head until he finally decides to grow up or gets that mentor that helps him grow up. And I kind of fault the, you know, not to say it's all the organization's fault here, but I feel like, you know, when you have a player like that, it's important to get a veteran in that locker room, someone who can take him under his wing and show them the ropes of the NBA, how you act on and off the court, how you handle travel, and all that good stuff. Because I really believe that a lot of that stuff is highly, highly underrated, and I think people take that kind of stuff for granted. You know, but it does go a long way, and, you know, we're seeing the dividends right now over in Minnesota, where KG's back there for a couple of years, helping those younger kids, you know, adjust to the NBA lifestyle and show them how to do it the correct way.
No, those things definitely matter. I mean, of all players, talk about him, Steph Curry actually gave some credit lately to Jared Jack for kind of helping him earlier in his career with professionalism, things like that, so it really is. It's not something tangible. It'll never show up in a box score or any sort of advanced metric, but it is important.
Right. Now, we talked a lot about the top teams in you know, both conferences sort of a little bit here. Let's talk about, because for me, the most fascinating aspect of the playoff race is always going to be the 6-7-8 seed in the Western Conference. To me, that's always the biggest question, and we could probably poll 100 people and we're still not going to get a definitive answer on who those 6th, 7th, and 8th teams. And as it currently sits, it's Utah, Denver, and Houston. Very early in the season, you got a team like the Pelicans who are expected to compete for that 8th spot. They're currently 1-7. Memphis is playing very poorly, and that's a, you know, another mess for another day down there. It's just a lot of interesting stuff is going on early in the season. But I want to ask you, which teams are on your radar to compete for those last couple of spots in the Western Conference, and who do you ultimately think is going to deserve that spot?
Well, I definitely think Houston is going to be better than where they are now. I mean, I will say the problems go beyond the fact that Harden and Lawson kind of don't mesh together. I mean, there's some effort, defense issues. There's Dwight Howard not looking as good as he used to be issues. There's injuries and But I do think sometimes the physical part of it plays into the mental part. Lawson and Harden, you feel like you don't fit, and then it beats your effort. And I kind of think they'll get better as the season goes. So that's a team, even if they're down there, I'll kind of put them above that. Utah, I think, will probably sit in that race. They look pretty solid early, and I think they'll maintain it. The expectations have been high, and they seem to be playing pretty well. Denver's obviously a surprise that high, but Mike Malone, he's a very good coach. He's got them playing defense, competing, and using the altitude, and Moutier's playing really well, so they might stick in that race. I'd say the Pelicans, I mean, I know they're a trendy pick just because of Davis, and they're really struggling, but, you know, they're bound to get healthier than this, and if they do and take time to kind of get with Gentry's system, I think you'll see dividends from that. The Kings, it just doesn't look like it's going to happen for them, but the Pelicans might be a team I'd watch for down kind of in the bottom of the standings right now.
Yeah, you know, there's something going on. And say again?
What's up?
Yeah, no, there's definitely something going on in New Orleans. You know, new coach, I figured they'd be a little bit faster, bigger tempo. Anthony Davis hasn't been playing his best basketball. There's something going on down there. Now, one team that I'm keeping my eye on for the past couple of years, and I think they've built their team the best way they could build it, given their situation more in terms of location, and that's Utah Jazz. Gordon Hayward struggled out the gate, yet he's slowly coming back around. I know he added a lot of muscle this offseason, probably getting used to his body. It's affected his shot, but his defensive performances have, you know, really improved, and he's got one of the hardest jobs defending, you know, the other team's best scorer most nights. Rudy Gobert has really turned into a great defensive player down low, and has really freed up a guy like Derek Favors to focus more on the offensive end, but he can still chip in on the defensive end. What is your take on the Utah Jazz this season, and do you see them competing and or getting into the playoffs this year for the first time in quite a while?
I think they will. I mean, Favors, Gobert, it's probably one of the best front lines in the league at this point. I mean, it's definitely ideal. You have a shot blocker, and then you have a guy who could defend but also could score. They could both guard, probably both big man positions. They're both athletic enough to switch in the pick and roll and handle smaller guys. They can also handle bigger people as well. So that's a great front line. Hayward started slow, and they're still 4-2 or so. So, you know, even with that, they're still winning games. And, you know, I think they have a pretty nice roster. I think they could certainly make the playoffs. I don't know how much they could do once they get there with some of these teams at the top, but they're certainly a team that I could, you know, perform well and make the playoffs for sure.
Now, this Clippers team is always interesting to me because I feel like there's just always so much hype on an annual basis with this team. Yet when it comes push comes to shove, they falter, they fail. They really reamped their bench this year, which is interesting to see because the biggest problem I have with this roster, and I want to see if you disagree or agree, is I think they're playing Austin Rivers way too many minutes, way too many minutes, especially with the rest of the talent on that roster. And I don't know if it's just, you know, Doc's kind of saving those other guys, Jamal Crawford, Paul Pierce, and Josh Smith, if he's just saving them for, you know, down the season, down the stretch, and trying not to wear those guys out. But I think that's going to be a big problem down the road. And obviously the whole Hacker, DeAndre Jordan might come back to bite them in a playoff game.
Yeah, it really just seems like there's always something missing with that group. I know they're really talented, and they really have everything you want. They have a big man who could defend and block shots. They have an elite big who's also a playmaker, and Blake, obviously. And they have shooting. You know, Chris Paul's, I'd actually say, the second or third best point guard in the league. Now you can't say best the way Curry's going. But, I mean, they really have so much, but there's just something with the roster. I don't know exactly what it is, but maybe it's just a lack of talent. Maybe they're just, you know, as talented as they are, they're just not quite as talented as Golden State or, you know, those teams in the top kind of two or three spots. Obviously, it should be Houston last year, but it kind of I question whether they can take that next step to the conference final, especially with Golden State and, you know, reinforce San Antonio at the top.
Right. It's and the Spurs are another fun team to look at, too. I mean, they're always going to be, you know, they're going to get their 50 wins. I don't think anybody's doubting that. LaMarcus Aldridge had to adapt to a smaller role here, considering he has way more talent around the roster. And it's really Kawhi's team. Kawhi's just been playing outstanding. And the big three are getting a lot of their rest and, you know, shaking off some of their offseason rust. My question to you is, what is it going to take for the Spurs to get back to the NBA Finals? Who is the biggest X factor in your mind for them?
I'd actually say the biggest X factor is Aldridge, really just because he's the new guy. He's obviously gotten off a little bit of a slow start statistically for him. You know, part of it's usage. He's not in the same situation, but part of it is still kind of, it's all just fitting together. And the reason I say him and maybe the, him and then how much do Parker and Ginobili have left? Because at the end of the day, they're going to need those guys. You know what Duncan's going to give you in the playoffs. You know what Leonard's going to give you at this point in Green and the depth of the roster, but probably how acclimated does Aldridge get, and then how much do Parker and Ginobili have left at the end of the season? I do think it's a good sign for them that with integrating all these pieces and kind of learning how to play, they're still 6-2. I think that's a good sign. I know records early could be deceiving, but I think that's a good sign that they're kind of figuring it out as they go and they're still able to win games. I mean, even Miami in 2011 wasn't able to do that. They still, you know, won 58 games at the end of the day. So I think, you know, they're impressive to me. You know they're going to be there at the end. And then it's going to take those guys playing well, and then it's going to take a titanic effort to take down Golden State, obviously.
Right, right. Well, here's a fun little nugget. I guess Greg Popovich gave Kawhi Leonard a tape of Charles Barkley to study and, you know, for him to kind of learn that game and to play a little bit bigger than his body. And that's very scary for the league if Kawhi ends up getting that kind of skill set that Barkley had, the knack for just getting rebounds, which Kawhi's always been good at anyways. But let's wrap this podcast up. Our nice little quickly half-hour shows that we do. We figured people would rather listen to a quick half hour than listen to 2 hours of guys talk on and on and on. You know, you get your quick hits, get the information, you get out, and enjoy the rest of your day. Question to you. Rajon Rondo got his second triple-double the other day. Yesterday, I believe. How many triple-doubles do you see him getting, and is it refreshing seeing a, you know, motivated Rondo now?
You know, I think it is refreshing. You know, obviously with the situation in Sacramento, who knows if he's motivated just for him or if he's motivated for them, but it's definitely refreshing. I'll go with 5 triple-doubles. I'll say he gets a few more as the season goes. A couple late in the season, him and Cousins get a little acclimated.
Right, right. And I assume you've seen the new Pepsi commercials. It sounds like that's kind of all Kyrie Irving has to look forward to these days. But he did say that he has a date in mind that he's going to return. When he returns, do you see anybody slowing down the Cleveland Cavaliers coming up, you know, especially down the stretch? It's probably going to be, you know, late December, early January time frame. That's my guesstimate of when Kyrie's going to return. But at this pace, you know, there's really no reason to rush him back.
Yeah, I'd say the answer to that is, you know, the West will have a very hard time with the Warriors and Spurs. I don't see anybody slowing them in the East. And I think it's a good sign that they're able to kind of compete defensively and win with Kevin Love in the lineup because, you know, as well as they played in the playoffs, there was kind of that question, well, when Love gets back, do they defend this way and still win so efficiently? And they have so far, so that's a good sign.
And well, I'll end the podcast on this quick question. This is a very interesting tactic by my man Evan Turner, who had a quote, I don't know if you caught this, he said, you know, he wished he was the logo, the NBA logo, because then maybe more chicks would be into the NBA. Someone on Reddit, I believe, made him a logo of, you know, a silhouette of him. He's now selling those shirts. This is usually a sign where he's going to be traded by Danny Ainge when players get too comfortable in the city. Would you buy a shirt with Evan Turner as the NBA logo, and or would you sign a petition to have Evan Turner replace Jerry West as the logo for the NBA?
I absolutely would not do those things.
I kind of like the shirt. It, I mean, I have a Joakim Noah shirt that is Joakim Noah in the Jordan symbol with the bun. It's. I mean, I like that stuff. It cracks me up. Obviously, I don't take it too seriously. But yeah. So I guess I'll do it here. Well, I guess we'll plug. Go check out Brooklyn's Beat for all your Brooklyn Nets gear. You can follow Justin online on Twitter. It's at Brooklyn's Beat. You can also catch him over at hoopscritic.com for all his writings related to other NBA stuff and possibly Nets stuff. But Justin, it's been great. And, you know, as always, we'll stay in touch.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, no problem. Everybody, take care.